And our final matter for oral argument today, and then we have three non-oral that we'll be considering, is file A220067, Mora Acquisition Appellant versus Jesse Pierce Respondent. Respondent did not file a response, and so will not be appearing today. And so we have counsel for Mora Acquisition. And so when you're ready, counsel, you can approach the podium, and since there'll be no opposition, you'll have no rebuttal time unless you want to talk to yourself at that point. But when you're ready, if you would identify yourself for the record and who you represent, then you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Jason Steck, S-T-E-C-K, and I represent the appellant, Mora Acquisition. Simply put, we shouldn't even have to be here. This is a simple case of a simple mistake made by the court administrator in Kanabec County. Having served a process server thinking that it was the attorney with a conciliation court order. When Mora Acquisition actually did obtain an attorney, it had appeared pro se at the conciliation court matter, that attorney contacted the court administrator and found out what, and identified what the error was, that they'd served a process server and never served Mora Acquisition, and that attorney requested that the court administrator electronically serve Mora Acquisition's newly filed attorney.
Mr. Steck, can I ask you, I noticed you mentioned that in your brief too, and when I look at the court's order denying motion to remove, I don't see that the court said an attorney was served. What the court said is that that plaintiff signed up for EFS and service via EFS was effectuated, and then goes on to say whether plaintiff opened it or whether it was provided directly to attorney Joseph Steck. I assume they were referencing you because you were the one requesting the motion to remove later that year. So isn't the critical issue here, which the court found had occurred, is that your client had signed up for EFS?
No, the court did determine that, but that determination was clearly erroneous. The client appeared pro se. The client did not, as a pro se
but
litigant,
a pro se party can sign up for EFS, so I'm not following why that would be clear error.
Because that didn't happen.
What didn't happen?
That my client did not sign up for EFS. The only entity that had signed up for EFS was a process server from Metro Legal. My client, John Bonner, had never signed up for EFS, and he would receive process by mail if he was.
Isn't your client Mora Acquisition?
Yes, he was the owner of Mora Acquisition.
Okay, so
is Mr. Bonner an attorney or a former attorney?
He's a former attorney, but he does not sign up for EFS, frankly, because he can't without his secretary's help, which he doesn't have anymore.
Hasn't he signed up for EFS in the past?
Not since being removed as an attorney. He has not newly signed up for any EFS service on any case that I'm aware of.
Does he have to re-sign up? I mean, that's my question. I mean, if he's counsel and he had received documents in the normal course through the electronic filing system, and he's the designated representative of Mora Acquisitions, I'm having a hard time understanding why the district court's finding is clearly erroneous that EFS delivered it, and maybe he just didn't see it because he's not checking it anymore.
Because this matter was filed long after Mr. Bonner was no longer a practicing attorney.
I mean, once you register in EFS, your registration continues. You don't have to register every single time.
But you have to sign up for each individual case to have EFS service. And, I mean, this is outside the record, which, of course, gets to the second point in my brief. But I would note from my personal knowledge that Mr. Bonner doesn't know how to do that because he's not a computer guy, and he would always, when he was a practicing attorney, have his secretary sign up for service for him. So since he has been no longer a practicing attorney, he has never personally signed up for EFS on any case.
So can you tell us where in the record, I mean, you're the appellant, it's your burden to demonstrate that the district court's order is erroneous. Can you show us where in the record the EFS registration is? I didn't see that.
It's not in the record. There is no record of an EFS registration service, and that's what gets to the second point here. there are a variety of questions that the court has that get to the facts of the case that Moore Acquisition was never given an opportunity to make a record of in the district court. We were not given a hearing. When we made a request for reconsideration, that was ignored. When we attempted to submit a statement of the record to this court, initially the district court simply ignored that. When we requested that this court give instruction as to what we should do when the district court ignores an attempt to make a statement of the record, a special term issued an order that said a statement of the record is not appropriate in this case. In short, we've never been given an opportunity to address these factual questions because we've never been allowed to make a record.
If the court file shows that Moore Acquisition is registered under the EFS system, can we take judicial notice of that?
Only if you can take judicial notice of exactly who was registered as Moore Acquisition's receiving of service.
So if the court file indicates who receives service on behalf of Moore Acquisition?
Absolutely, you could take judicial notice of that. I don't think that appears, at least it wasn't in anything I was able to access through Mintz's, but if it did appear, it would appear as what I had verbally obtained from the court administrator was that the person, the entity, that was the email address that was signed up for EFS for Moore Acquisition was a Metro Legal email address, which means it's a process server company. There are no attorneys at Metro
Legal. Mr. Steck, just to clarify, when a party signs up for EFS, so if you sign up for EFS on behalf of your client or the client does it directly, whatever email that client provides is pursuant to the rule the location or address of where notice is sent. And would you agree with that? So all the court needs to know is if Moore Acquisition registered, then whatever address is in there under Moore Acquisition's registration is where notice will go, and the rule says that, and the rule also says that the registered person or entity is responsible for its updating its email.
That presumes that it is possible to identify from the record who signed up, who specifically signed up for
it. Does that really matter? My question is, did Moore Acquisition sign up for EFS?
No.
It did not?
No.
That's contrary to the finding by the district court.
Exactly.
Then who signed up for EFS on behalf of Moore Acquisition? How did that happen?
There's two ways that EFS can be signed up for, or that a person can sign up for EFS service. The primary and most commonly used way is when an attorney files a document into a case, they select as part of the filing the document to add themselves to service contacts for, in this case, Moore Acquisition. But another way that happens is when a case is initially filed, like at the counter at a courthouse, papers are given to the court administrator, and the court administrator adds a person to EFS at that time. And that appears to be what happened here.
But we don't know. We
don't know, exactly, because we never got an opportunity to make a record.
Just to clarify, would you agree the rule does not provide for a court administrator to register someone for EFS? You're telling me that's common practice?
I am telling you that's common practice. When Metro Legal files cases on behalf of somebody that they're filing service for, like, for example, this is most commonly done in eviction cases, they will add themselves. It's supposed to get added as under other service contacts rather than as a party, but I have noticed from time to time that errors get made and they get added as a party instead of as an other service contact.
Well, getting back to Judge Frisch's question, as the appellant here, or even as part of your motion for reconsideration, because I'm assuming the judge denied it, looked at it, says, well, your client is registered and there's really nothing more before the judge. And even in your motion for reconsideration, you're not saying all these things you're telling us right now. Wouldn't it behoove your client to, whether it's an affidavit from the service company or something affirmative to show the judge that somehow someone other than your client registered, that it would at least open the door for a reconsideration?
Absolutely, but the rule for motion reconsideration doesn't permit the submission of evidence or affidavits.
No, I understand, but I mean, I'm looking at your letter even for reconsideration, and what you say is the filing is clearly erroneous because the person served by EFS was not plaintiff. Well, that doesn't really answer the question. The question really that's important, and you're raising that right now for the first time, is how did your client become registered? The service naturally flows from that. but once someone is registered. So you're telling us that your client was registered inappropriately by someone other than your client?
Yes, Your Honor.
But you never said that even in your letter for reconsideration.
By the time that I filed that letter for reconsideration, of course, the district court record had been, the Mensa's record had me on there as the attorney now, because I had filed a notice of appearance, and there's no publicly accessible document that I can pull to present that says, here's the way it was before. All I had to go on was the verbal comments from the court administrator saying, I served somebody at Metro Legal. And that's all I had to go on.
And there's no motion to supplement the appellate record either. I mean, that's the other issue that is a little bit challenging to me, because you're raising all of these things that we don't have in our record, and there's no motion to supplement the record. So, and we're handcuffed in our appellate review.
And that gets to the second point, because the proper method to create a record in the first instance, which is what's missing here about all these facts, is in the district court. On a motion to reconsideration, motion for reconsideration. Now, if the district court had denied the request for reconsideration, at least it might have stated a reason for it. But in this case, the district court simply ignored it.
And which it has the right to do. I mean, under the rule, the district court is not obligated to rule on a request for reconsideration.
Yes, but the district court does have to provide due process, a notice and opportunity to be heard. It never allowed Mora Acquisition a single opportunity to go in front of the district court and say, here's what happened.
That leads me back to my question I asked, though. It strikes me you didn't give the court a reason to do that. In other words, up to that point, we can tell from the record the court looked at its record and said your client's registered. And so as of that, unless there's something new, that does end the story of service, because whoever registers, they're responsible for the email. And that's what I'm getting at is, if even you included in the letter that my client not only did not register, but moreover, we have evidence that someone else did on my client's behalf as a judge, that would at least tell me, whoa, that's something worth exploring. But it didn't seem like those are the sorts of information, and I didn't even see it in your briefing to this court.
We don't know who the person was that signed up for Metro Legal. All I had was the verbal comment from the court administrator that somebody from Metro Legal signed up for it. I don't know who it was, so I don't know who to go to Metro Legal and say, I need an affidavit from this person. They have dozens of employees. And in combination with that, all I had was my personal knowledge that Mr. Bonner habitually uses Metro Legal to do his case filings for him. And so that's all I had to go on. I provided the district court what I would have provided, given an opportunity on a hearing on a motion for reconsideration, would have been Mr. Bonner's testimony saying, I never signed up for e-service and I didn't have an attorney.
But that wouldn't end it, though, would it?
Well,
because
it
your client was registered, and the whole point you're getting at is someone other than Mr. Bonner on behalf of Mora did it.
But the district court's order states that Mora Acquisition was served and that attorney Joseph Steck didn't open it, and that's essentially his problem. That includes within it the presumption that the person that was served on behalf of Mora Acquisition was the attorney Joseph Steck, who just didn't open it. There was no attorney. It certainly wasn't me. And that that conclusion that this attorney was served and didn't open it was clearly erroneous. Well, There's nothing in the record to support it.
But it's not necessarily that an attorney was served, but that the person named or entity named in EFS on behalf of Mora Acquisition had been served and services effective as of the time that it is transmitted. And so, I mean, I think that's different than saying that you were served and that was good enough.
But the district court's order implicitly identifies that person who was electronically served as me. And I was not on the case until October 19th.
But it doesn't matter who actually was served, because its service is completed upon transmission to an email address that is set up for EFS to receive documents on behalf of Mora Acquisition.
If that party is not actually authorized and they're a person that is in there as a mistake, which we believe the record would show if we were permitted to develop a record, then I don't think service is effective, because it is a mistaken identity as to who that service is directed to.
But isn't it doesn't that burden fall on Moore Acquisition to correct whatever name is or email address is in the system?
When they find out about it, which it did.
Why is it at the time that they find out? I mean, aren't they responsible for monitoring that to make sure that, to see if they, well, first of all, if they receive any information and to confirm that that is actually the accurate email address that should be there?
Well, when Moore Acquisition had no reason to believe that it was electronically signed up for service at all, because a process server had apparently done that on its behalf without Moore's knowledge, what were they to monitor? They believed that they would receive any notices that were relevant through the mail. And it was only after there was a long delay after the June 8th hearing with no word from the court that Moore Acquisition thought to say, well, why haven't we received notice? And that's what I'm out of time, but.
I know you're out of time, counsel. I can ask another question.
Yes.
Was Moore Acquisition represented by counsel in the conciliation court proceeding as a corporation?
No, it was not, because the conciliation court rules currently allow the owner to appear in conciliation court.
All right, thank you.
And that's in the conciliation court order.
Oh, can I just ask one follow-up question? When the removal was, when the notice of, were you representing Moore?
Yes, as
at
soon
the
as, I was the one that identified the error, right. And then I signed up for e-service at that point.
Thank you.
Andreas.
Yes, I do have an additional question. Well, first of all, what is the relief that you're requesting?
Well, ideally, we'd like a reversal in saying that we need our conciliation court of appeal. But given the court's questions about the record, I think the alternative relief that we're requesting in the second point in my briefing might be more appropriate, and that is a remand to the district court to develop the record as to who was served and whether they were authorized to be served.
To that point, how can... You'd mentioned that your name is now there.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to show that somebody else put that name in there?
There are portions of the court administration record that are publicly available, and there are portions that are only internally available. I believe that on remand, there would be additional records available through the court administrator's internal records as to who was listed and when, rather than just who's currently listed.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate your answers to our questions today. We will take the matter under advisement, issue an order within 90 days.
Thank you.
We'll adjourn now to address our three non-oral matters, and you have a good day, sir.